I'm Tara Merchaner tonight on EWTN News Nightly. A community comes together in prayer to remember those lost in the deadly Texas flooding. Coming to the table, Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the U.S. and Russia have exchanged new ideas in peace for Ukraine. We have the latest. Making moves, a large United States diocese decides to restructure. We'll tell you why. Plus, fighting spiritual battles. Learn all about the upcoming Feast of Saint Benedict. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, community solidarity and prayer. Three things the people of Texas are turning to nearly a week after the deadly flooding. As of right now, 120 people have died. 170 are still reported missing, and cleanup is happening around the clock. In Kerr County, the hardest hit area, people gather to grieve and pray together.
I throw up my hands and praise you again and again.
They came together yesterday evening at a high school football stadium in Kerrville. Many wore green ribbons in honor of the 27 girls at Camp Mystic who sadly lost their lives in the floods. Another prayer service took place in the city of Beaumont, where a Catholic priest encouraged everyone to take their concerns to God.
It's a good thing, I think, to wrestle with God about this. You know, as we do, we can learn to know Him better.
Religious leaders from multiple faiths gathered at a theater to offer prayers up to God. Several of the victims of the flooding were from Beaumont. Meanwhile, the work continues. Hundreds of volunteers are giving their time and energy to help in any way they can. Joining us now is Andrew Metcalf, Program Manager for U.S. Disaster Relief for Samaritan's Purse. Andrew, thank you for coming on the show today. Tomorrow, believe it or not, marks a week since those floods hit. Can you tell us what it looks like on the ground a week later?
Yeah, absolutely. There are volunteers out and about in the community helping out those in need. Here at Samaritan's Purse, we have 100 volunteers helping five families at the moment and others simultaneously in the neighborhood, just helping them with their flood cleanup, which involves pulling out that water-damaged furniture, water-damaged drywall and insulation, pulling out all the nails and screws, and then spraying for mold so that we can help these homeowners have their home contractor ready and begin their recovery as quick as possible.
So important in such a difficult scene still. You know, they're telling people not to come help because they are still trying to conduct search and rescue operations. So if that's the case, how can people help?
Well, first and foremost, people can pray. This community is reeling from a tragic day on July 4th. There are homeowners that are going through some of the darkest days of their lives. There's families that are enduring the darkest days of their lives. They need our prayers. There's also opportunities to volunteer, and you can look for those on our website at SamaritansPurse.org. But please be praying for all of this community. They really need our prayers right now.
Very important. So what supplies at this point are you able to offer people? What's the biggest need?
Yeah, so with Samaritan's Purse, we're supplying our volunteers to go out and help people with their flood cleanup. They're out to be the hands and feet and mouth and ears of Jesus. Not only do they want to do the work of helping pull out all of that water-damaged material from their homes, but more so, we want to offer being that shoulder to cry on, that warm smile, somebody to give them a hug, and just to let them know they're not alone in the midst of their disaster.
Absolutely. And how are people doing spiritually at this point during such an incredibly difficult time?
In any disaster, as in the early days, people need the opportunity as people are working alongside of them to share their story. And so each and every one of us wants to take time with our homeowners just to listen to what was it like on that day? How are they holding up right now? It's really important that people get the opportunity to share and have somebody to listen to them.
Incredible. Andrew, thank you so much. And if there's any last message that you want to give to those of us who are not there, what would that be?
Just please continue to pray for this community. They're enduring every day. Everyone's doing their best. And we have just been so blessed to be a part of coming alongside them in this time.
All right, Andrew Metcalf, God bless you, and God bless you all for all the work you're doing. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, ma'am.
In other news, Secretary of State Marco Rubio sat down with his Russian counterpart to discuss the war in Ukraine. America's top diplomat told reporters the U.S. and Russia exchanged new ideas for peace talks, Secretary Rubio calling it a new and different approach, but at the same time clarifying it is not a guarantee of peace. White House correspondent Owen Jensen begins our team coverage. Owen?
Tara, President Donald Trump says Ukraine has been getting hit very hard. He calls the war terrible and a shame. He wants it over. And tonight his Secretary of State is trying to move it in that direction.
Kyiv under attack. Another major missile and drone strike launched by Russia, causing fires and destruction. Several people killed or wounded. Speaking after a security conference in Malaysia, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio tells journalists,
well, our strategy is to continue to engage all the parties that are involved in finding an outcome to this conflict. We will engage any time that we have an opportunity to do so, like we did today.
On the sidelines of the Southeast Asian Forum, Rubio and Russia's foreign minister sitting at a table for just under an hour, their second face-to-face encounter since Rubio became Secretary of State.
There were some ideas exchanged today, some viewpoints that they expressed to us. That I'll take back to the president for his consideration, and hopefully it will lead to something. I don't want to overpromise. I mean, again, as I said, this is a conflict that's been going on now for over three years.
Just yesterday, his boss, President Donald Trump, addressed the current state of the conflict, including the number of victims.
They're losing. Now it's up. I've been saying 5,000. Now it's up to 7,000. Think of it, 7,000 people a week on both sides. 7,000 people, young, mostly military people. Young souls are dead and dying, and it should be stopped. It should be stopped.
Two rounds of direct peace talks between Russian and Ukrainian delegations yielded no progress. The Kremlin says there is no date for a possible third round of negotiations. And this afternoon at the U.S. State Department, spokesperson Tammy Bruce tells reporters,
what the secretary said was that he would bring the new ideas to the president. We didn't say that they were going to open a path for peace.
Secretary Rubio also calls on European countries to help Ukraine's defense by providing Patriot batteries. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
On Capitol Hill, Senate Majority Leader John Thune says a vote to bring heavy sanctions against Russia could come as soon as this month. Momentum has been building behind the bipartisan bill as Republicans work behind the scenes to win President Trump's support. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest on that. Eric.
Good evening. The sanctions bill would hit Russia hard in the wallet, bringing big tariffs on imports as much as 500% from countries that purchase Russian uranium, gas, and oil. These are on top of the already existing sanctions on Russia's finance, energy, and defense sectors that were put into place after Russia invaded Ukraine. This new sanctions bill is gaining bipartisan support. More than 85 co-sponsors are on board.
I think it's an important message to send, especially now. And I think it's leverage that we need and that, frankly, the White House needs in their negotiations with the Russians. So in my view, the sooner we can execute on that, the better.
Senator Lindsey Graham, the bill's sponsor, has touted the measure, saying it would give President Trump the ability to waive sanctions at a later date and put the pressure on those who buy Russian oil and other products.
And this bill will give him significant leverage over China and India, who prop up Putin's war machine. And the only way you're ever going to end this war is to have Putin's customers put pressure on Putin.
Other Republicans hope to get European countries on board.
Not only ourselves, but getting Europe to join with us, put really biting sanctions in place and help bring Russia to the table and talk realistically about peace.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, the lead Democratic co-sponsor of the bill, argued that President Trump still needs congressional approval to end sanctions.
There is very limited and constrained waiver authority in the national interest, such has been done in similar kinds of congressional enactments before. But very importantly, in this bill, there's congressional oversight. We can override the president if we disagree with him.
Even House Democrats are speaking out for sanctions.
But I am a strong supporter of continuing to escalate and intensify the sanctions that have been previously put into place relative to Russia until they back down and, you know, withdraw from Ukraine.
House Speaker Mike Johnson says he hasn't seen the details of the sanctions bill just yet, but he is open to bringing it to the floor for a vote at a later date. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Eric, thank you. The Republican-led House Oversight Committee releases a video of the closed-door deposition by Dr. Kevin O'Connor. He was the White House physician for former President Joe Biden. Dr. O'Connor declined to answer question after question during his transcribed interview.
Dr. O'Connor, were you ever told to lie about the president's health?
On the advice of counsel, I must respectfully decline to answer based upon the physician-patient privilege and in reliance on my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. I am not a lawyer. I must follow my lawyer's advice in this matter. On the advice of counsel, I must respectfully decline to answer based upon the physician-patient privilege and in reliance on my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. I am not a lawyer, and I must rely on my lawyer's advice in this matter.
Dr. O'Connor was subpoenaed to testify as part of an investigation into what Republicans describe as the cover-up of President Joe Biden's cognitive decline. Republican Congressman James Comer, who chairs the committee, criticized O'Connor for his decision to hide behind the Fifth Amendment, saying the American people demand transparency, but Dr. O'Connor would rather conceal the truth. The committee also subpoenaed other former Biden officials to testify, including former White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. Congressman O'Connor says the investigation will continue. President Trump's executive order ending birthright citizenship is now on hold after a federal judge in New Hampshire certifies a class action lawsuit. As a result, the judge said he will issue a preliminary injunction blocking the order. It's the latest move in a months-long legal back and forth. In January, the president signed the order denying citizenship to those born to parents living in the U.S., either illegally or temporarily. Shortly afterwards, several judges issued nationwide injunctions blocking the move. Then in June, a Supreme Court ruling limited the power of lower courts to issue those nationwide injunctions. However, that ruling kept open the possibility of plaintiffs seeking a widespread block through a class action lawsuit, which is what the judge certified this morning. A church leader in California is removing the obligation to attend Sunday Mass. He says the move comes amid fear among immigrant communities. Bishop Alberto Rojas from the Diocese of San Bernardino says many undocumented individuals are scared of being arrested. He adds that his decision aims to ease their anxiety. The diocese near Los Angeles serves around 1.5 million faithful. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including as he celebrates the 50th anniversary of his ordination, Colonel Raymond Burke gets a warm message from Pope Leo, what the Holy Father said. And tomorrow is the feast day of Saint Benedict, but today we'll take you to where he changed Western Christianity forever. Poll says that most Americans approve of a slew of recent Supreme Court rulings. In the SCOTUS poll survey, 64% of respondents say states should be able to ban gender transition treatments for minors. 77% say schools should allow parents to opt their children out of so-called LGBTQ literature. Additionally, 80% say age verification measures to access sexually explicit websites are a good idea. A judge has rejected a challenge to a longtime ban on taxpayer-funded abortions for low-income residents in Michigan. The judge says the group that brought the lawsuit had no standing to file it. The suit was filed by a group which pays for abortions for low-income women, saying the majority of women they represent would qualify for state support if Medicaid-funded abortions were allowed. The ban has been in place for decades, despite a 2022 constitutional amendment enshrining abortion in the state Constitution. The Diocese of Grand Rapids, Michigan, will undergo a major restructuring due to a shortage of priests.
I am grateful to our pastors who have generously taken on the responsibility of shepherding two or three parish communities. But this is not a realistic expectation for more and more priests.
Bishop David John Wakawiak announced the Rooted in Christ pastoral planning process after the diocese saw just one ordination to the priesthood in the last 2 years. According to the new plan, 21 parishes across the diocese will merge and 14 will form new clusters of collaboration between two or more parishes. Pope Leo congratulates Cardinal Raymond Burke, thanking him for 50 years of priestly ministry. In a letter, the Holy Father says in part, quote, "He has preached the gospel according to the heart of Christ and has recounted his treasures diligently, offering his devoted service to the Church Universal." Burke wrote that he was very humbled by it and called on the faithful to pray for the Pope. Changes are on the way for one American diocese. Pope Leo XIV has accepted the resignation of the Bishop of Baker in Oregon. Bishop Liam Carey has served as Shepherd of Baker since 2012. The diocese is comprised of about 33,000 Catholics in the eastern part of the state. Bishop Carey's successor will be Father Thomas Hennin, currently a priest of the Diocese of Davenport, Iowa. Tomorrow, the church celebrates the feast of St. Benedict, the founder of the Benedictine Order. He is the patron saint of students, monks, and Europe, but also a powerful intercessor against evil. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sedergren has more.
St. Benedict was a monk who lived in the 5th and 6th century here in Italy. He founded two monasteries, Subiaco and Monte Cassino, but most importantly, he wrote the Rule of Saint Benedict. And that became one of the foundational texts of Western Christianity and spread throughout the whole world, really shaped the way religious life was lived.
Centering life around ora et labora, prayer and work, as well as reading and study, Saint Benedict laid the spiritual and cultural foundations of Christian civilization in the West. His example still offers much to learn from today and should continue to inspire us, the abbot primate of the Benedictines explained in an interview with EWTN.
I mean, Benedict helps us to reorganize our own personal lives and give it order based on the gospel with a lot of human values in it. And from there, we can try to rebuild our civilization that seems to be so threatened in so many ways. We are living ruptures right now and unexpected turbulence, even violence everywhere. And Benedict, at a similar kind of juncture, created these monasteries as spaces where ordered life in the presence of God could be brought back, could be lived. And that's, I think, our task today as well.
Beyond being the patron saint of Europe, monks, and students, St. Benedict is also considered a powerful patron in spiritual warfare and intercessor against the devil. He's especially known for his steadfast resistance to evil and the spiritual protection associated with the beloved St. Benedict medal.
It has a picture of St. Benedict on one side and a stylized cross on the other side. And in that cross are inscribed a number of letters. They are the letters that begin words that make up verses that are apotropaic, that sort of try to drive away the evils. There are prayers that drive evil away, that try to protect you. So it's like a blessing giving you in order to protect you from harm.
Like the medal itself, Benedictine spirituality and the rule of Saint Benedict have endured for centuries. Despite the many trials the Church has faced and continues to face in today's world, the abbot spoke of the order's resilience and expressed his firm belief that it will continue to flourish.
We had enormous crises. The beginning of the 19th century, monasticism was almost extinct in Europe. And yet today we have once again a flourishing landscape of many monasteries, hundreds of monasteries here in Europe and elsewhere. The ideal of St. Benedict and his rule are stronger than the individuals that live it. And they've come up again and again and inspired people to lead a community life according to the values of the gospel. That will be the case in future. There, I'm not worried about that. As long as there's Christianity, there's going to be also monasticism.
In Rome, Benedict Sedergren, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, up next on EWTN News Nightly, a wheel inspiration. That's right. We hear from the Catholic man who bikes several hundred miles across Europe. Long bike ride, many of us would prefer a cold drink of water than a little rest. One Catholic man from New York concluded his bike ride by meeting, wow, Pope Leo. Victor Mooney recently finished a 620-mile bike pilgrimage throughout Europe. He did it to raise awareness of anti-Semitism. And after riding his bicycle to Catholic shrines and former concentration camps in Poland, the Vatican invited him to participate in the Jubilee of Sports last month. And there he met the Holy Father. EWTN's Mark Irons recently sat down with Victor Mooney.
And Victor Mooney, fresh off his pilgrimage on wheels, joins us now. Victor, great to be with you. First off, what was it like meeting Pope Leo, and how did you find out about the invitation from the Vatican?
You know, the Holy Father, first of all, he hit a home run of hope in Chicago, and I think that reverberated around the world. And I didn't catch the ball, but I was in the park, and his words just touched us all. And as far as the invitation, I was having lunch at the Jasnagora Monastery, and if someone was looking at me, they would have thought maybe the salt shaker fell on the ground, but I opened up my phone and I seen the note from the papal household, and I just fell right on my knees and just started praying, just in humility, just saying, thank you, Father, for opening up this window. And as he said, we're all beacons of hope. So it was a moment that I will never forget.
Unbelievable. And I understand you brought a couple of gifts to the Holy Father. Tell us about those.
Well, the gifts were just it wasn't, you know, something that I invented. It was the sign of the year of the Jubilee, the Pilgrims of Hope, that was put on a pennant that I mounted on my bicycle, and I shared this just with the Holy Father, or just being another pilgrim of hope.
Mm. Well, what stood out to you most during your Poland trip?
Well, it was, I laugh about it, but I say the trek was in honor of Pope Francis, but St. John Paul II brought me to Poland. And the reason why I say that is he blessed me on World AIDS Day at the Vatican for a transatlantic road that I took across the ocean, and I was only successful until my fourth attempt. But having said that, when I was outside of Auschwitz-Birkenau concentration camp, there was a strong wind, and it came after I did a virtual call with a Jewish friend from Long Island. It was a traditional Jewish prayer. And after that, in like 15, 20 seconds, the wind just was just like, I felt like I was back on the Atlantic Ocean. But, you know, I wasn't fearful, but it was just that wind, it just really struck me. So that was definitely one part of the visit.
Victor Mooney, who rode his bicycle 620 miles through Europe and met Pope Leo. What a trip. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you. And to all the viewers at EW2N, stay strong, live strong, and keep doing what you do.
Incredible story. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I am Tara Merchant. Good night and God bless.